I'm Sarah.
I'm Erin.
And this is the Tribbles and Transporters podcast.
Wow. You have completely stumped me with that one.
Really? Because that's not what I expected you to say.
No, I mean, I know what song it is.
Yeah.
But that doesn't help me figure out where it's located in the Star Trek universe.
So there aren't any clues in there for you?
Any clues?
Yeah, there are two pretty obvious ones right off the bat.
Okay. I mean, I can tell that it's on a ship. You get the background hum of it being on a ship. But okay.
That's not the clue I was...
No.
Well, I guess that helps a little bit, yeah.
So
the song is called what?
It's Frère Jacques.
Okay. What is that? Who is that associated with in Star Trek?
That doesn't help.
Really?
No.
What nationality is that song?
Well, it's French, yes. Okay, so Picard would be the French character.
Yeah.
What
instruments do you hear?
Well, there's piano and flute. I did kind of wonder if maybe that was Picard playing his flute.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, other than that, I don't know. I kind of assumed that it might have something to do with Data, because Data features so prominently in Picard, which we are going to be talking about today. Mm-hmm. Other than that, I don't really have anything for you.
Okay, so what series is it from?
Well, it's obviously from TNG. Yep.
Yeah.
That was my guess anyway.
Yeah. All right, so we got there at least.
Okay. Once again, you're being gracious to me.
No, I didn't expect you to know the episode or anything like that from this. I just wanted to see if you could at least hone in on TNG and Picard playing the flute. So.
Okay. Yeah. No, my other guess was also a TNG episode, because I don't remember enough of the episode to say one way or the other if it would have fit, but the episode where Data creates his daughter Lal was my other kind of guess, just because, again, we're going to be talking about Picard today, and assuming anyone who's going to listen to this podcast will have seen the first episode of Picard. If you haven't, spoiler alert.
Don't listen.
Yeah, so obviously Data and the potential quote-unquote offspring of Data figure very prominently in this first episode.
If that was your theory, then who would be playing the flute and the piano?
I kind of assumed it was maybe Data and Lal. But like I say, I don't remember enough of that episode to even know whether that would have fit in or not.
Yeah, there were no instruments at all in that episode.
Yeah.
No, it's from a season 6 episode of TNG called The Lessons.
Okay.
And I don't really... I've seen the episode maybe one time. It's one of those episodes that I just never repeated very much. But it's the gist of it is there's a Starfleet officer who's works in the scientific fields, and she comes on the Enterprise, I think, for some special research. And she's kind of around Captain Picard's age, and they kind of hit it off. And their connection... they kind of bond over music, because she brings a one of those roll up electric pianos with her.
Okay.
And I think he ends up going to her quarters, or she comes to his quarters or something like that. And they see that they play these instruments. And so they spend the episode bonding over that. And Picard has a, you know, a romantic interest in that episode. So other than that, I don't really remember anything about the episode whatsoever. So,
yeah.
But I thought it would be appropriate, considering our topic today, to bring that in. So we are talking about the premiere of Picard. Aaron and I both watched it last week, and you watched it yesterday, right, Aaron?
Yep, and I got to watch it with my parents for kind of old time's sake, so that was nice.
And I'm pet sitting, so I watched it with three dogs. And they enjoyed it. Speaking of dogs, by the way, they're laying around me in this room, and they're some of them are snoring. So if you hear snoring sounds, that's what's going on. Hopefully they stay fairly quiet.
It's pretty cute to hear the little snoring sounds. And actually having dogs around you is very appropriate for talking about this first episode of Picard, because we had a canine star in this episode.
Yeah, my beloved Will Riker has been replaced by a pit bull.
He's very loyal.
I think Jonathan Frakes took it in stride, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, so I guess we're just going to go through. We have notes on the episode. We have a couple of audio clips we're going to play here or there. And we're just going to kind of start out, though, by giving our overall impressions. And guys, we have a brand new jingle for that.
Well, what do you think?
What do you think?
What do you think?
Well, Aaron, what did you think?
I had a lot of fun with this episode. I very much enjoyed it. I thought it was nicely done in that it kind of covered a lot of information in a way that it didn't sound like they were just giving us a history lesson on what's been going on the last 20 years or so. It was a neat way to just kind of dole out the information, get us engaged with the characters, and then, of course, engaged into the story that's going to be unfolding over the season. So yeah, I had a lot of fun with it. And I'm definitely looking forward to episode two.
My take on it is a little bit more mixed, I think, than yours. I don't, I didn't dislike it or hate it or anything like that. I thought it was fairly good. Part of my problem, though, I told you that I had to watch it twice.
Right.
There are a couple of reasons for that. The first reason is just because it was so much information to take in. And by the time I got to the end of the episode, like my brain was just going in so many different directions watching this thing, just trying to like adjust to this new version of quote unquote TNG that we've got now. Even though it's not a remake of TNG, but it's different. And so it took me a while to just digest that. And so there's no way I was going to be able to take notes on what I was watching and all of this stuff. I just had to like just take it in first. And then the second reason is because I am pet sitting. I watched it on, they have like this huge 60 something inch TV that I watched it on, and I thought, man, this is gonna be fantastic. I got this huge screen I can watch this on, and I hear from everybody how beautifully shot it is and all of this stuff. And we get into the episode, and Picard's like walking through his vineyard, and I'm looking at it like, something's wrong here. This looks horrible. It looks like somebody had taken their iPhone 4 and recorded it on their iPhone 4 or something. It's just, it looked odd to me. It looked fake. I was sitting there going, this looks fake. It doesn't look like what I'm used to seeing on screen. And, you know, so it was like that throughout the whole episode. And it really like was very distracting, and it was disheartening, because I thought at first, well, is this just how like TV looks now? Like, is this what HD TV looks like now? Because I've been spending the last like 4 or 5 years of my life watching YouTube and not dramas on television. So I don't know. And so I was like, okay, I really don't like this. And so it was just, I was really disheartened by it. And so that contributed to my mixed feelings on everything. And then I thought, well, you know what? I have read in the past about like this soap opera effect that a lot of HDTVs have now. I wonder if it's that, you know? And so I did some research on it and saw how to like turn that setting off, because there's like a setting on the TV that you can turn off to eliminate that. And yeah, it looked way better after I did that. I was like, oh, thank God. Thank God. That's what it was. So yeah, it the first time I was watching it through, I did not have that polished feel that you get with films. And so it took me completely out of that immersive experience, you know? So that was a huge problem. So anyway, I had to watch it a second time to kind of properly see it and to be able to digest everything better. So
yeah,
but we'll get more into that.
Yeah, there's a lot to digest.
So I will say that it's really exciting having this, because being a TNG fan first, I've been waiting for a continuation of their stories in some form for the last 15 years. It's just been 15 years of rumors of, are they going to bring the TNG cast back in any way? And it's always been a no from the people in charge of Star Trek. And so I think everybody thought it was a lost cause. You know, we saw these characters for the last time in Nemesis. We're not going to get them anymore. You know, read the books. That's all you have left of these characters.
Yeah.
And of course, Patrick Stewart was all, you know, he was talking about how he didn't want to revive Picard and all of this stuff. And so when the series was announced, it was like a miracle was happening. Like, is this really happening? Are they really doing this? You know? And, you know, and then when they revealed Data in Seven of Nine and Troy and Riker, it was like, oh, they're not just bringing Picard back. They're actually like going all in, and we're going to see what's been happening in these characters' lives. This is what we've been waiting for.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so it's just this huge anticipation and hope that they weren't going to screw it up. And I don't think they've screwed it up, but it is different. I'm kind of like wavering. Do I like the differences? There are some things I like about it, some things I don't, but
yeah.
I don't know. Did any of that like bother you at all? I mean, I didn't expect it to look like TNG by any means, but it looked, there were elements of it that were a little bit more different than I was expecting, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. There were some things that kind of threw me off a little bit. They've definitely scaled back some on making the costuming super unique and looking like, you know, not like clothes we would wear today. So like it really threw me off guard seeing, you know, Picard's two Romulan, I don't know whether they're really servants or more just friends that work with him, but, you know, so seeing them just wearing like everyday clothes, but then having Romulan features, every once in a while, I was just like, why does this look a little like odd to me? So there were little things like that. There were little touches in some of the, like the control panels on things, but I just kind of chalked that up to, all right, so this is in the future from the point of view of Star Trek as we're used to it. So, okay, they've got these holographic control panels and things like that. Plus just, you know, a current eyes view of the future and things like that. They've changed things around that way. So yeah, there are little bits and pieces, but I think because I'm not as intensely connected to TNG as you are, some of that didn't strike me as much as it would you.
Well, I think it's not just a TNG thing. I think it's a Star Trek thing in general. If we're going back to the 24th century, so I'm associating what we saw in this Picard with not only TNG, but DS9 and Voyager as well.
Right. True.
You know, little things like what you said with the wardrobe, for instance. All of the shows, TNG, DS9, and Voyager, had their own kind of style that they did with the clothing. But they kind of went out of their way, though, to make it look futuristic and very different than what we have today. And I felt like Picard, again, we're back to this issue that we had on Enterprise, you know, and the cage, where I feel like they were just going for a slightly more stylized version of 20th and 21st century clothing. And in some cases, it was 20th century clothing. I mean, you have Picard in the opening scene wearing a gray t-shirt with a button-up shirt.
Yeah.
You know, I mean...
yeah, exactly.
Stuff like that. And they kind of tweaked it, you know, in other scenes to make it look, you know, slightly different than what we have today, but not quite, you know.
Yeah.
I saw in the scene where Picard was outside the Starfleet Museum, there were two ladies walking around in pantsuits that looked like they were from 1999.
Yeah. You
know, it was just kind of jarring to me, you know, to go from the 90s Trek where we had these, you know, really different looking clothes to this.
Yeah.
I'm going to say this a few times probably today, but it felt off brand from 24th century Star Trek. I'll say that.
Yeah.
And I know styles change, but I feel like we wouldn't go back 300 years. And
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, there's a kind of a line of what is considered retro versus just old. So for them to, you know, it's not like they're just wearing retro clothes. They're actually wearing so things that we could see someone, if they were walking down the street in that outfit, no one would look twice. For the most part.
I would say there were maybe a couple of outfits in the outdoor scenes walking around outside, you know, Starfleet headquarters and stuff like that, where I thought, yeah, that would look a little odd, you know, if somebody wore that today. But pretty much everybody else that was not in a uniform, you know, like Picard's, you know, wardrobe the entire time, he was just pretty much just wearing a sweater and like khaki pants.
Yeah.
Like people wear that all in work boots and stuff and a belt, you know, he didn't look out of place for 20th or 21st century at all.
Yeah. I mean, he could have just stepped out of his car on the way to the set and just been wearing that, and nobody would have thought twice that, you know, oh, why did you come already in your costume? Like,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, in fairness, the TNG clothes were the worst out of, I think, Voyager and DS9. I mean, for the most part, everybody just wore, like, the onesies, you know?
Yeah, I was going to say leisure suits, basically.
Yeah, it was a little ridiculous on TNG, but, I mean, but we wouldn't be walking around wearing that stuff today, you know?
No.
So I'm glad they didn't go back to that. And obviously, in the Star Trek universe, you know, 30 years have passed or whatever it is, and you know, people are not going to be wearing the same stuff that they wore in TNG, but I would expect there to be at least some variation on that, you know.
Yeah So, well, and even when we get different things in, you know, Deep Space Nine and things like that, of people wearing their casual wear, it's, you know, unique cuts and different angles on collars and sleeves and things like that. It doesn't have to be, you know, majorly odd to kind of have that futuristic look to it. I mean, I know there are designers out there doing that sort of thing today, but it's not the mainstream fashion. It's not what you go to just any store and buy, and there's, you know, racks and racks of it. And yet, if someone was wearing that, I would go, oh, that's really neat, or that's cool. but not think it was odd.
Well, there are some like fashion, there is some fashion out there that looks very futuristic that they'll do like on the catwalks, you know, and stuff like that. That it's just like what you're saying. Like it never makes it into stores and you don't see people actually wearing that stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I would have been fine with that. Like go with some of that stuff that nobody ever actually wears, you know?
Yeah. That's what I'm saying is they should have gone in that sort of direction rather than making it so, it's almost like they wanted to make it relatable and then they went way too far with making it relatable and making these feel like real people.
I would say also what you just said about the alien makeup and everything. I'm glad that they're not making the Romulans look exactly like they did in TNG because that was a little ridiculous too. But I just felt like they were too human also.
Yeah.
Especially the two that were living with Picard. They weren't his servants. They were refugees basically from what happened with the supernova. And so Picard basically opened up his home to them is what I'm getting from that.
Mm.
So they're companions of his that I guess help him run things or take care of him, you know, in his older age. But they were way too human, especially the female.
Mm. Yeah. And I think some of that was the hairstyle. And some of it was her clothes. I mean, looking at some of what she was wearing, I was like, my mom would look really good in that. And she would wear it too.
Yeah.
Like it just looks like something.
With like a smock.
Yeah. Oh, or she had this like kimono wrapped jacket thing that was, I mean, quite nice, but not at all what I would expect someone in Star Trek to be wearing.
Right. And they really played down. I mean, I read that the Romulans in this look more like the original series version of the Romulans, which I don't really know what that looks like because I haven't seen that. But do they look like the JJ Romulans? Were those in his movies?
Yes and no. I found there was a little bit more makeup done to Zaban, which is the male Romulan who was Picard's friend. You know, he had a little bit more of a forehead ridge and things like that that you saw that was very exaggerated in TNG. And there was a little bit of it in the Kelvin Universe movies. But the Romulans in those movies, it was very different because they were, I guess, had done these ancient Romulan mourning rituals and things. So they had, you know, shaved their heads and put tattoos on their faces and things like that. So that was one of the things that was a big criticism of those movies is because the Romulans looked really weird compared to the rest of Star Trek. So yeah, it's a variation. I did pick up on, you know, some of the makeup on the Romulans hinting at the kind of TNG look. I've seen pictures of the Romulans from original series, and they look very similar to Vulcans. So it's just very pared back compared to what they looked like in Next Generation.
The male, was it his name Zaban? Is that what his name is?
Yeah.
Something like that. He did have forehead ridges, but you had to really look closely to see them. They weren't very pronounced at all. The female didn't have anything other than the eyebrows and the ears.
Mm-hmm.
But she had just like this, you know, curly bob cut with her hair, you know, going on. It was all very, very human. The male Romulan also had just a typical, you know, haircut, and they didn't act Romulan. They acted like they were from, like had been living on Earth their entire lives.
Hmm.
Again, I didn't expect them to copy the TNG Romulans, but in TNG, you had a sense that the Romulans were a very different species from humans. You know, they had a different attitude. They had a different way of speaking. They had a different culture. I just would have preferred to feel a little bit more of that with these guys.
Yeah.
And even Narek at the end, you know, when he's talking, you know, he's supposed to be a Romulan. He's like a hipster Romulan or something going on with yeah. the beard. Definitely. And shaggy hair and all of this stuff. Like, you couldn't even see his eyebrows because the hair was like covering him. But
yeah.
And then, yeah, that British accent.
Did throw me off a bit. I was like, okay, that's an interesting choice, because where would that come from? I mean, is it just he learned English from some recording of someone speaking with a British accent? I mean, or is that the setting on his universal translator? Because the rest of the Romulans that we encounter in this whole episode don't speak that way. So yeah, I was very confused by that.
Well, I think Laris, the female living with Picard, also had a bit of an accent. Hers was a lot more Americanized, but
yeah. She did have some sort of accent, but I just chalked that up to being Romulan. It wasn't recognizable as, oh, well, you sound like you just, you know, you were in London and you walked in here and now you're talking.
Yeah.
Exactly. Of course, I have no idea where that accent comes from. I know there's vast regionality in British accents. So, yeah, that did throw me off.
To be fair, I mean, there have been other characters, alien characters, that have had British accents in Star Trek. Yes. Cardassian that tortured Picard in Chain of Command had an English accent. I think some of the villains in the TOS movies have had accents, you know, so it's maybe even a Klingon has had like a British accent. I don't know. It seems like something that would happen, maybe. So this isn't the only example of that, but it was just, for some reason, it just really stood out to me. It was a little distracting. So
yeah, for sure. And I know the kind of accents with people from Earth gets brought up every once in a while, because of course with the original series, we get several accents in there with Scotty and Chekhov and all of that. But then further into the other series, we don't get many accents going on. So there's always kind of this idea of Earth becoming, you know, a little bit more unified or homogenized in its culture, and, you know, humans sort of losing these regional accents. Yet obviously, you know, in this we had Picard speaking French at one point, and we have other characters with accents that have shown up in different series and things. So, you know, it's one of those things where it kind of contradicts itself, and yet we all just kind of accept it.
I mean, like, I don't want to harp on it too much because, like I said, this is not the only time that Star Trek has done it. I don't want to, like, single out Picard with, you know, the whole accent thing. I just don't know why. It was way more distracting in this than it has been in other stuff I've seen. So,
yeah,
maybe I just wasn't paying that close of attention to the other stuff. I don't know. The last thing that kind of bugged me about this, I'm just going to get all of the stuff that bothered me out of the way, and then we can talk about the rest of it. The future, the whole like technology, the new stuff that we're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't expect it. Again, I did not expect the whole like Elkar's look of TNG to look exactly like it did, you know, back in 1990. But
yeah,
I think I was expecting at least some sort of updated version of that, like we had in the movies. Movies of TNG, they did not keep the same look as they had in the show, and that was fine. They just kind of updated what they had to make it look a little bit sleeker and more modern and stuff. But they did not bring in stuff. It was still on brand for Star Trek. I felt like a lot of this holographic stuff going on was more like Minority Report. It felt like some other type of sci-fi than Star Trek to me. So it just looks out of place is what I'm I'm saying. It was kind of cool and everything, but it just did not feel like Star Trek tech.
Yeah.
You know, I know stuff's been updated in the last 20 years, but I update it, but keep it on brand, you know, is what I'm saying. So I don't know. Maybe that didn't bother other people.
Well, I know it did bother some people because, I mean, I'd been trying to stay away from some of the social media stuff just because, you know, I hadn't watched the episode yet. And so I was trying to avoid any spoilers and things. I did actually see something accidentally that then didn't really spoil something for me, but it made me think a little bit differently going into the episode. But anyway, trying not to see a bunch of things, but there were a lot of people saying they loved it. There were a lot of people saying, I liked this, but I didn't like that. And then there were definitely some people saying, oh, I didn't know this was taking place in the Kelvin universe. Great, thanks. You know, there are some people that are like, I'm not touching it because Alex Kurtzman is touching it, so it's not Star Trek. So yeah, it seems like there's a lot of there's a broad spectrum of opinion, and there's a lot of some people having their own personal opinions about what is Star Trek and what isn't, and what should be allowed in our fandom and things like that. So yeah. Those were the kind of things that I definitely did see some of that out there. Like, this doesn't look like Star Trek. It looks like, you know, the fake Star Trek that we've been dealing with for the past several years. Like I say, there were a lot of people out there saying, wow, that was awesome. I loved it. I'm pumped. You know, you take everything with a grain of salt. You know, to me, I'm sitting here saying I loved it. I have no problem whatsoever with anything that you've brought up saying that, you know, that maybe little nitpicky things that bothered you. And, you know, if someone didn't like it, that's fine. You know, I'm not offended or threatened by that or anything. So I think that's one of the great things that that Star Trek is it's got a wide appeal, and you know, there's a corner of the Star Trek universe for everybody.
Yeah, these are just overarching stylistic choices that they've made that were just that stood out to me personally, and they're things that I noticed and things that did not feel right to me. But that's also because we have new people making Star Trek now, so yeah, they're going to put their own spin on it, and I understand that. I mean, 90s Trek looked nothing like, you know, the original series.
Yeah, for sure.
Look, I'm gonna like this series no matter what, because it's a continuation of TNG in a way, you know.
Yeah,
and I'm really grateful that we're getting this. You know, so I'm not sitting here, you know, trying to bash it and say it's horrible, it's not Star Trek, and all of this stuff. It certainly is Star Trek in a lot of ways. It's just didn't quite feel like Star Trek in other ways to me. But I like that's because, you know, new people are in charge now, and it's 2020. So
yeah,
I have to. That's, you know, it's going to be a process for me adjusting to that.
Yeah. Well, speaking of things looking slightly different than you expected, there were a few things that I noticed that I don't know if it's just me thinking this or if it actually was a little different. I remember when we first started getting trailers for Picard and we were seeing Data, and there was speculation that these were dream sequences because, of course, you know, how would Data actually be there? And a lot of people were talking about why Data looked so weird. You know, they said it's his hairline wasn't right, his, you know, his pupils were way too small and things like that. I didn't notice that in the actual episode. In fact, I was looking for it in that particular scene, the scene where he's painting in the vineyard, and Data looked more like Data to me. So whether that's just me having the differences very exaggerated in my memory, and then, you know, they were still there, or if they tweaked those things, or maybe even having it look a little odd in the trailer might have been some sort of, you know, trying to throw us off a little bit. I'm not sure. Did you notice anything like that?
Oh yeah, for sure. The Data in the trailers looks extremely odd.
Yeah.
And I think I saw an interview where where Brent Spiner acknowledged that. He was like, yeah, it looks horrible in the trailers.
Yeah.
But, you know, that was before, I think, what I heard was they were not going to go back and apply like CGI to Data to de-age him, that they were just trying to do it with makeup.
Yeah.
And then they made the decision, maybe after the uproar over it on social media, to go back and spend the money and CGI him. And so that's what happened, is he was CGI'd. And so, yeah, he looked like pretty much like the Nemesis version of Data.
Yeah. In this. Which is totally cool. And I thought that was so much better than what we had seen in the, I mean, even if they were trying to de-age him with makeup, they didn't do it right. They just made him look weird.
Yeah. There's only so much you can do with makeup.
So yeah, there were little things like that, that I noticed that looked, much better than they did in the trailers. And then, since I alluded to the little thing that I had kind of spoiled for me, was actually, I had gotten an email, I want to say it was from the official Star Trek store on the website and things like that, and they were advertising the necklace that we see Daj wearing. Now, this was after the premiere, so you can't say they spoiled it for everybody, but because I had waited until Saturday to watch the episode, and then I saw this ad for this necklace, and they had both Daj and Soji in the ad. So I knew there were two going into the episode. Now, I will say that going into it, I had assumed that maybe this was a sort of like a cloning thing, or, and when we came to the scene where the sort of masked agents attack Daj in her apartment, and they said, you know, oh no, she's activated and things like that, I assumed it was kind of like a Jason Bourne kind of situation, where it's like this deeply ingrained training and they just kind of do things by instinct and stuff like that. So that's kind of where my mind went until we started getting some bits and pieces about her possibly being synthetic. So yeah, there was a little bit there that was kind of spoiled for me, but it didn't spoil the episode. It just made me think a little differently going into it. But then the other thing that I had actually been thinking before the episode came out, when we were just seeing trailers, some people may wonder why on earth I made this logical jump. At the beginning of our podcast episode, I mentioned Data and when he created his daughter Lal. For some reason, Daj in the trailers reminded me of Lal. And I thought, oh, you know, my brain is just making a weird connection there or something, because she's clearly not acting like Lal did, and she's clearly acting very, very human and things like that. Whether it was just the fact that Data was in these trailers, and then you get this, you know, beautiful young woman with the chin length dark hair and things like that, and my brain just made that connection for some reason, but it turned out to be weirdly kind of an appropriate connection. as we get further into the episode.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they didn't reveal exactly who she is or where she came from. Picard is making the assumption that she's Data's daughter in some way. I'm not sure I'm convinced about that, though. I feel like she has a connection with Data, but not in that way.
Well, I think it was a little bit alluded to by the fact that he went and spoke with this scientist at Daystrom, and she was talking about her colleague who had been studying before and all this kind of thing. And, you know, they sort of suggested that maybe he used his process. I believe I wrote it down correctly. Fractal neuronic cloning, to use some of B4's positronic matrix and things like that to create his own artificial life. And so he created these two girls. So that was the sense that they were saying, that they were like Data's daughter, not a direct thing. I just made some sort of weird connection in my brain when I first saw the trailers and things like that.
So were they saying that Maddox used part of Data's positronic brain to make these two? Is that Maddox had that in his possession?
Yeah, that was my my take on it. Now, because they had B4 there, I was assuming he used B4. And so then technically it's not connected directly to Data himself. But I don't know whether maybe they somehow had a piece of Data. I don't know. But yeah, that was essentially what I took from it, was he found a way to basically take what Soong had done and directly replicate it. You know, it's not like he re-understood the mechanics and things like that. He kind of took what was already there and replicated it to the point that it was as good as what we saw with Data, and then put it into a very flesh and blood based body. So they appear to be, you know, living humans, but they're actually artificial life.
Okay, I have questions about all of this. Yeah. First of all, what I don't understand this whole concept in Star Trek of Dr. Soong was the only person in the entire universe that could figure Data out, and nobody else had access to any of his research even after he died. So Data is like this mysterious being that nobody can replicate. That just seems really not believable to me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even Data wasn't able to replicate it.
Well, yeah, but I mean, how do you not have... Did Soong destroy all of his research or something so that nobody else had access to it?
That I don't know. But I think that was just kind of the gist of it, was somehow no one else was able to do what he did.
Okay, I just have a hard time... I mean, I feel like somebody should be able to figure that out.
Yeah.
I mean, he can't be the only person. First of all, I mean, he just can't be the only person that knows how to build an android like Data. I mean, surely somebody else would have figured it out. Secondly, somebody soon would have had to have destroyed his research. I mean, you would think that he would have given it, you know, given access to it to other people, or after he died, somebody would take it and Starfleet would use it or something, unless something happened in an episode that I'm not remembering.
Yeah, I don't know whether it was the sort of thing like he had this secret laboratory where he worked and then nobody was able to find it or something like that. That was always kind of what I was going off of, but where I got that or if I made that up, I don't know.
Well, Data was able to find him. I remember there was an episode, I mean... Like, this is one of the TNG storylines that I wasn't super interested in, so I did not pay very close attention to the episodes where Dr. Soong was in them. So I may be completely off base with this stuff, but I'm pretty sure Data went to his laboratory at some point, because I remember that scene or something.
Yeah, I know he definitely shows up in episodes, but yeah, I don't remember enough of it to be able to say how that came about as to whether it was in his lab or what that was. Yeah, it is one of those things that I don't fully understand about Star Trek.
Second thing I don't understand about this is, what is the benefit to creating an android with flesh and blood?
Yeah, it seems to me like it's just this drive that some people seem to have to create life as close to human as possible. And, you know, we see a little bit of that going on today with people trying to create artificial intelligence that, you know, you can converse with like you do any other person, trying to create robots that look as close to human as possible. And it seems to be kind of a comfort level, like we would be more comfortable with androids and things that look human. I don't know whether that's the full drive of it, or it's just a desire to create life. And because our template for, oh, this is what a sentient being is like, we try to replicate ourselves, essentially. Yeah. Beyond that, I don't know.
Right. But what they're saying is that this android, unless I'm misunderstanding, is going to have like a heart beating and like organic organs and stuff,
yeah,
and blood flowing through them. I thought that one of the appeals of being an android was that you weren't mortal in that way.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, we definitely see, we see Daj bleeding and, you know, she's able to be repaired with medical tools and things like that. So, but then we also see her when she's defending Picard from the people attacking her. You know, she's very clearly doing superhuman things. So it's almost combining the two.
Yeah, I just find it odd, like an odd idea. It's almost like you're, I mean, I understand what you're saying about the comfort level and stuff, but also you got to think about that as like an ethical thing. Like people are against cloning and stuff like that. I mean, that is not cloning exactly, but it's creating another human being, essentially, artificially. You know, yeah. How comfortable would people be about that? You know, it's just,
yeah,
I don't know.
And that is always one of the conundrums that comes up in stories about artificial life and things like that. I'm thinking immediately about the video game Fallout 4 dives into that question of where do we draw the line between man and machine, and, you know, when you create an android that is almost indistinguishable from a human, do they then get the rights that humans have? Are they still a thing rather than a person? So yeah, it's one of those areas that's often discussed.
Well, that's what the episode Measure of a Man was about in TNG with Bruce Maddox. You know, it was about, well, is Data actually a sentient being, or is he artificial? You know, and that's what that episode was about. It raises interesting questions. I just don't understand this whole, like, Dr. Soong research thing and why nobody can seem to replicate a Data. And I don't understand the appeal of making basically a mortal android. It just kind of seems contradictory to me. And that everybody would be okay with that. So it's just, you know.
Well, I think one of the things with this this episode is very clearly people are not okay with it. You know, because of what happened with the synthetic life forms kind of rebelling and destroying Mars. You know, they've banned synthetic life. So I guess part of the appeal of making a synthetic life form that appears human is, okay, I've still been able to do my research and construction of a synthetic life form, but they're not going to be exposed by, you know, when they get a scratch and underneath their skin is metal. So I guess that might be part of the appeal of it, but why that is always seems to be the goal of creating these artificial life forms is to make them as human as possible rather than just making them as good as possible or as advanced as possible.
I guess it's just that was never the, I don't think, the goal of Dr. Soong with Data. I think he just wanted to make an artificial life form that was sentient. He wasn't about trying to make him, you know, an actual human body, you know, to put him in.
Right.
He wanted it to look human as much as possible, but it actually function like a human body, you know, as you have a, you know, blood pumping through you. I don't think that was his goal.
Right.
What did you think about the opening scene in 10 Forward with the poker game?
I thought it was interesting. It was an interesting way of introducing the fact that something terrible happened that is causing Picard all this conflict. I felt like there was probably some subtext there that I was missing in a way, that it was just very obscure. Now, whether you picked up on it because you know more about the TNG characters than I do. Some people are nitpicking it and saying, oh, well, the windows were wrong. They should have been dead center in the ship and all this kind of thing. And, you know, somebody commented and said, it's a dream. It's gonna be wrong in some ways. So, you know, cut it some slack. But yeah, I could definitely tell they were trying to tell us something, but I don't know that I picked it all up.
Yeah, I don't think I picked it up either. Yeah, I mean, it could be one of those things where it's going to be tied into later episodes, maybe. I didn't really see a huge connection to this one other than the Mars incident. But that had nothing to do with the poker game. So, I mean, Picard could have been imagining that in any setting. I thought the poker game was an interesting callback to TNG. Obviously, poker was a huge part of that series.
Yeah.
It's interesting getting to see Picard play it because we only saw him join the poker game in the very last episode, in the very last scene of the show. And we didn't really even get to see him play. He was just kind of shuffling the cards around. So it looks like he would have really enjoyed it, though, if he had gotten in on the game sooner. But I will say, look, I was somewhat nitpicky in this scene because 10-4 definitely was not right, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know what those they're like pedestals lining the back wall with like these cups on.
Okay.
I was like, what is that? I mean, that did not show up anywhere ever in TNG. That was not in 10-4 at all, you know, and yeah, the chairs were not those like low back purple ones that they used to have. Mm-hmm. They were like these tall gray velvet chairs or whatever.
Yeah.
And yeah, 10-4 was not in the right place on the Enterprise D. But the thing that bothered me the most about that was Data's uniform.
Mm.
Like, I'm sorry. Like, this, I'm going to be nitpicky about this because you guys are spending $12 million or whatever it is, $20 million to make this. And mm-hmm. the costume that they outfitted him with looks like a cosplay thing.
Right.
It really does. And that was just very distracting to me. It did not have that nice finished polished look that the actual TNG uniforms had for the movies. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at his collar, just look at his collar, like the gold collar. The zipper is only up halfway and it's sticking out. I mean, just little details like that. You know, if I was the director or the costume designer on this, I would probably make sure that was zipped up all the way and the zipper wasn't sticking out. You know, just stupid stuff like that that should not be making its way on a production of this quality.
Mm.
You know, it's just, that's just like, I just notice things like that.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, also the TNG uniform, like this is extremely nitpicky. Okay. This is extremely nitpicky. I understand. But even the TNG uniforms were not right. The collars were too high on them and the black part at the top went down too far on their uniform. It's just stuff like that. Like if you are a legit costume designer, pay better attention to the uniforms. And why can't you make something that looks better than a cosplay uniform? You're a professional in Hollywood. Like you should be able to recreate these costumes in a really high quality way. And mm-hmm. you look at them and examine them and make sure that the dimensions are right. You know, it's not that hard. But it's just little stuff like that that bothered me, you know?
Right.
I feel like this production is should be better than that.
Yeah, and I'm sure some people will argue, well, you know, they were dream sequences, so, you know, little details are going to be off. But whether that's a reasoning that's coming about because it wasn't done to exacting specifications, or if that was intentional, I'm going to say it probably wasn't intentional.
No, there's no way. There's no way. There's no way the costume designer was sitting there, okay, well, let's just not zip up, you know, his collar all the way here because this is a dream sequence. Like, no.
Yeah.
No, that's stupid.
Yeah, I guess I was thinking more along the lines of the design of it rather than that kind of detail.
Oh yeah, so but, let's make this collar taller than it actually was, and let's just make this off because this is a I really don't think that's the case. I mean,
yeah,
I could be wrong, I suppose, but again, that's just really dumb. That's just really dumb. Like, why would you need to do that? So
yeah,
anyway, that's just my, you know, because I've worked in the entertainment industry, and if I was directing this, I would have no room for error with that stuff. So
It's hard when you're taking something that people have a lot of their time and effort and emotion and everything invested in as fans to then recreate it. There's probably going to be something that you mess up, but yeah, you should try your best to avoid those things. Whether or not they did that in this series is, you know, up for questioning. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see as we go along what things become, you know, purposeful correlations. Like you say, with the costuming stuff, I highly doubt it is purposeful.
But it's not going to, I mean, I'm not going to let that ruin my viewing experience of this. So another strange thing, gosh, I feel like I'm just ripping this thing to shreds, but these are like legitimate things that just popped, I mean, that were foremost in my head watching this. And I'm just gonna like get all of the complaining out of the way in this episode, and hopefully subsequent episodes, you know, we won't have these surprises anymore because we've had this world established in this episode. But
yeah.
The other thing that I just laughed at in this episode was all the like the news station, like the media. In TNG, it was established that people don't watch TV anymore.
Right.
So that's not a thing, supposedly, in the 24th century. And now we have Saban watching TV as he's, you know, or their version of TV.
Yeah, like a news feed.
Yeah, I mean, it was like a hologram. It wasn't like a screen that we have on our walls, but it was a hologram screen, basically, that he was watching. And it looks like freaking CNN. He was watching.
Yeah.
And then the graphics for it looked like the cheesy 90s graphics that you would get, like when they showed like a news feed, like on a movie or something. Like the horrible, like generic graphics, and they were like ripping off. It was called FNN. They were ripping off CNN, and it had like the news ticker going across the bottom. I mean, it looked exactly like 21st century news,
right?
You know, except worse, actually. I think the graphics were worse, and I just couldn't believe. I mean, I was like, is this like a cheap Hallmark movie where they're trying to make them look like a newscast? And we apparently just went into like MS Paint and made the graphics for this and all of this. It's just, I mean, I was like appalled at it. It just looks, again, this is another like 20th/21st century looking thing that we've got in this that it seems very out of place to me.
Yeah, that didn't stand out to me as much, but I did find it a little interesting that we had this like reporter coming to interview Picard, and it's all this, you know, almost seemed like a kind of sensationalist news program and things like that, which did strike me as a little odd. It didn't seem like a very Star Trek based thing, but I didn't pick up on it as being you know, something that was set as a precedent of people don't do this in the 24th century. As you were talking about that, it did remind me of the whole thing on several episodes of Voyager, actually, Neelix made his own, basically a morning show that would then was able to be played by the, you know, the crew of Voyager. So that's probably the closest thing I can think of to television being shown in Star Trek.
Well, yeah, and wasn't there an instance also where on DS9 Quark made like a commercial for a Quark's bar or something like that?
Yes,
and that played.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, but it wasn't. That seemed like more of like a closed circuit type thing, just for the space station.
Yes,
it wasn't like this huge news conglomerate that was broadcasting all over the globe, or you know, or whatever. It was just. I just got the impression from the shows that stuff like that did not exist in the 24th century. Obviously, people got news somehow, but
yeah,
I didn't think it would be. Look, to me, the traditional news that we have is outdated.
Mm.
Younger people don't sit there and watch broadcast news.
Yeah, for the most part.
For the most part. Unless it's like a special thing, like, you know, an election or something like that. Sure, you'll tune in. But for the most part, on everyday life, people just will get on their devices and just browse a news site really quickly, you know, or something like that.
Yeah.
They're not gonna. This was by far just the most ridiculous thing in the entire episode to me. I just could not believe what I was watching, honestly. It was like, it was that ridiculous to me.
Yeah. I did think the kind of, you know, Picard portrait montage showing him through the ages, you know, was kind of weird.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Well, and then Dodge, you know, walks past the store. I guess it's a store. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what that was that she was. But you know how you like saw back in the day, like in the 50s, you'd walk past like a, mm-hmm. a store selling televisions, and they have them all in the window, and they'd be playing like all the same show, you know?
Yeah.
And so you'd walk outside and you just stop at the window and watch TV through the store window. That's what was.
Yeah. And nobody does that today. No. So why are they doing that in the 24th century?
Yeah. And what was that? Like, what kind of store or something was that? It was like holograms, yeah. Actually. It wasn't like screens that she was watching. It was like holograms floating. Because I paused the frame to look at it. And yeah, it's just like, I don't know, 10 holograms of Picard's head in there playing randomly floating around in this place. And then did you see the sign, like the neon sign that was outside that window to the
no,
side?
I didn't.
So there, just to cap this whole thing off right here, there is like on the brick wall next to the store, and I don't know if it's affiliated with the store or if it was just an ad or something.
Mm-hmm.
So it had in like big bright, it wasn't quite neon, but it was similar to neon. Behold the future. Preview next year's pad tech today. And then it had like this 50s looking graphic with like lightning bolts. And then something, like some piece of technology. It wasn't a pad. I don't even know what it was. But it had like lightning bolts on top of this piece of technology. I was like, what the heck is this?
Yeah. So basically going completely against the whole economic thing that we talked about in a previous episode, and how there's not buying and selling, so why is there an advertisement?
It's kind of like the same thing. Well, why was that interviewer trying to like goad Picard into like freaking out like he did? Because obviously that's what she was trying to do. She was giving him a hard time. It's like, so does she have some sort of agenda here? Is she doing this for ratings? Like, what the heck's going on? Like, it's just odd stuff like that that we have today that doesn't fit in with the Star Trek universe, you know, as we know it. And that whole scene, honestly, was just there to fill everybody in on what's been going on for the last 15 or 20 years. That's all it
for
was.
Sure.
There was no other purpose to that scene whatsoever.
Yeah.
Other than, like, I guess Dodge saw his interview and knew to find him or something, but I feel like he could have done that a different way, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. So going into some things that I liked about the episode, I believe you have an audio clip of the moment where it's actually right before Picard does that interview, and he's asking to make sure that the interviewer is not going to ask him the questions that she does end up asking him that cause him to have this emotional reaction. we get some interaction there between Picard and Laris and Jaban about his role in helping to rescue as many of the Romulan people as possible. And I just thought that was a really great moment.
You went over the terms 3 times, sir. She assured me she will not inquire about your separation from Starfleet.
After so long, sometimes I worry you've forgotten what you did. Who you are.
Laris,
we have not. Now go.
And sir? Be the captain they remember.
Yeah, I really loved that moment where Laris says, we have not. And that was a thank you right there of, you know, you definitely did something very, very important. And even if you want to, you know, hide from it and things like that, there are people out there who still appreciate it and who are alive because of what you did. So I really loved that moment. It was probably one of the first moments in there that really got my emotions into it.
I think it's going to be interesting seeing the relationship Picard has with those two unfold. Obviously, there's a lot of history there that we didn't see, you know, that took place between Nemesis and the show. And, you know, at the end of Nemesis, Picard was trying to make peace with the Romulans, and then Riker went off on the Titan to basically on a diplomatic mission with the Romulans. So things were headed in that direction at the end of Nemesis. That was kind of the beginning of Picard's relationship with them. And so I think it's an intriguing relationship to explore in Star Trek. What is it going to look like with the Federation and the Romulans being allies, sort of, basically? Although the reporter seemed to indicate that a lot of people didn't like the Romulans still.
Yeah.
So it's a little confusing what exactly the status is between the Federation and the Romulans at this point. But obviously, because the trailers show a lot more Romulans in the future, we're going to find that out.
Yeah, it's going to be a definite part of the storyline.
One thing I noticed on my second watch of this that I didn't notice on the first was this whole necklace thing.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't notice on the first watch through just how much in your face they put this necklace.
Yeah, it's one of the loudest necklaces ever. Every time she even brushes it, it's like this metallic clinking.
I did not notice that. That's interesting that you picked that up.
Yeah.
But it makes sense because every single scene that she's in wearing the necklace, or not every single one, but there are several scenes where they want to make sure that you see her wearing the necklace. And so she puts her hands up and starts playing with it,
mm-hmm.
you know, so that your eye goes there. And Picard notices it out of the blue for some reason. This is his line about the necklace.
That's an unusual necklace. May I see?
So she's playing with the necklace, so obviously his eyes go there.
Yeah.
How is it an unusual necklace?
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's a unique design, but I wouldn't think it was that odd or unique if I saw someone wearing it. You know, what I thought was odd about it was the very obvious attention they were drawing to it.
Yeah.
They clearly were making a big deal of it. But like I say, because I had seen the ad, you know, selling the replicas of the necklace, you know, I kind of was like, okay, yeah, this is very clearly something they're using to, you know, mark something important about this character. But yeah, what kept distracting me was the sound. And then every time we see the necklace up close, it's like a solid piece. What on earth is clinking on it? They make this metallic clinking sound really obvious. And yet when you see it, it's not like two rings floating separately on this chain. It's a solid piece. There are no moving parts to it. So what is clinking? It's like, to me, I don't know. I don't know if you've ever noticed, but on some shows on like Food Network and things like that, they really amp up some of the sounds of like chopping and pouring things, and they actually add in sounds.
Oh yeah.
And I've noticed it because you'll get the same sound in an Iron Chef episode, and then it's the exact same sound in, you know, Kids Baking Championship,
yeah.
when they're pouring milk into a bowl, you know, and yeah. That's all I could think of was that kind of cheesy, we want you to notice this, so we're putting a very obvious sound right here.
I did not notice that at all about the necklace, but you're right. That is sound design 101. It's just adding a bunch of sounds that aren't recorded, you know, natively on the set. No, I had to do that in a film for like film school. I took a sound class and we had to pick a movie and add sound effects to it, you know?
Okay. And,
So yeah. On the same note, though, it's also kind of cheesy how they did that with number one. Obviously, the dog is probably not making any sounds, but every single time Picard drew attention to him, they did a dog sound.
Yeah.
You know, it's just stuff like that.
Yeah. A very talkative dog.
Exactly. He had to whimper or, you know, say, do something. It's just like that, like, cheesy 90s, like, sound effects thing, you know, that they put in for animals.
Yeah.
You know, it was very obvious. But yeah, it was just like the second watch through, I was like, okay, they're drawing a lot of attention to this necklace. They mm-hmm. really want you to see it in every single scene that it's in.
Yeah. And we do get a little bit of a payoff with that. First of all, when Picard takes it to Daystrom and shows it to the scientist there, and she says, oh, well, that was Bruce's symbol for his process. Then that connection to, okay, well, so he's probably involved with Daj. And then when we see the reveal of Soji at the end, and she has the same necklace.
And she's playing with it while she talks to Nerys.
Exactly.
Just so that we know that she's wearing it. Yeah.
To draw attention. Yeah. Now, I thought it was interesting that she knew she had a sister, whereas I didn't get the sense from Daj that she knew, but I don't know whether that was the case or if she just, you know, never happened to mention it.
Yeah, I did not pick up on that, but you're right. Daj talked about her childhood as if she didn't mention a sister at all. She talked about her dad, and we saw her mom.
Which you'd think she'd mention it if she was a twin.
I think it's clear that Soji is going to have... Obviously, she's involved in some important thing going on in the Federation right now, so she's going to have probably a different knowledge of things.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, but all of that remains to be seen. But yeah, I did not pick up on that. We get to the point in this episode where Daj needs to find Picard because she's been being chased or whatever again. Mm-hmm. And this is like the second time when she finds him at Starfleet headquarters. She tracks him.
Yeah.
And then later in this scene coming up, she tells Picard that she tracked him, and Picard was like, how did you track me? You need a security clearance to do that.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, how was Picard being tracked?
I'm assuming it was from like when he went into the archives and asked to access his files or whatever. Or just the fact that, you know, maybe he checked in when he went to Starfleet headquarters and things like that. So it was just showing that, you know, he had these movements and that was the area he was in. I don't know that it was implying, you know, she was able to pinpoint him to he's within 5 feet of you kind of thing.
Is it a little creepy, though, that he's being tracked?
Well, I think it's the same way that if, you know, the FBI or something wants to find a person, they can bring up, you know, their bank card records and see what ATMs they're using and all that kind of thing. It's not like an active, this person is always being watched. It's a just a paper trail of what you do through the day, and compiling all of that was what I took from it.
So you're saying, like, only in a very special situation, if they needed to find him for some reason, they would look into all of these, like, security databases and figure out where he's been.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking it was.
Because at first I thought it was like, well, he's got some sort of device in him that's allowing everybody to track where he is. You know, I mean, what if he, you know, was back at his, you know, in some random place, you know, how would she find him, you know, that way? But yeah, I guess that makes sense because of the hologram that she brought up. She went through a lot of screens, you know, as if she was going through a bunch of data, trying to figure out, like you said, where he'd been and stuff like that. So yeah, I guess that makes more sense. In that same scene, there was an audio clip that you wanted to play, where he's talking.
Yeah. So basically this is when Picard has sort of put some bits and pieces together, and he is talking to Daj about his theories of who and what she is.
You must look inside deeply and honestly. Have you ever considered the possibility
that I'm a soulless murder machine?
That you are something lovingly and deliberately created, like Daj on Sinian.
You're telling me that I'm not real.
No, I'm not. If you are who I think you are dear to me in ways that you can't understand. I will never leave you. We will go together to the Daystrom Institute in Okinawa.
I was just accepted at Daystrom as a research fellow.
You were? That's brilliant.
That doesn't mean anything anymore.
If I'm right, it means that you are the daughter of a man who was all meaning, all courage.
Yeah. I love that moment. We really get to see, you know, what Picard feels about Data, and you know, the culmination of the friendship there, and the realization that, you know, he was, you know, very, very human, even though he may have felt out of place at times, and he was always striving to be human. In a lot of ways, he was more human than a lot of people that they encountered that were genetically human. So I love that he made sure that Daj knew, you know, I am saying that that you have something special, that it's not a bad thing that you're discovering about yourself. Now, obviously, other people are believing that it is, and clearly these Romulans that are coming and trying to capture her are doing so for a reason. And it very much seemed like we're either capturing her or destroying her. Now what that reason is, I'm not sure. And I'm sure that's something that's going to come up in future episodes. But again, just this touching scene where we get Picard explaining this to Daj was one of my favorite parts of the episode.
Do you think that that was Patrick Stewart probably being pretty sincere about Brent Spiner too? I kind of got the sense that he was talking about Brent in that as well. And that's what made it so heartwarming and authentic, I think.
I hadn't gone there, but yeah, I could see that being just as true. Because as you've said in a previous episode, the TNG cast is very famously very good friends. So it could be sort of that double meaning there, which would then make it an even better scene.
Yeah, I'm not saying that Patrick can't act, and you know that it's Picard talking about Data. But no, the only reason I think I bring that up is because Patrick has told stories publicly about his last scene with Jonathan Frakes and Nemesis, where they're saying goodbye, you know, Picard and Riker. And he said that he like cried, he broke down and couldn't do the scene, and that when it was them saying the lines, it was Patrick and Jonathan talking to each other and not Picard and Riker. And so I feel like this is going to be a thing in this show, you know, when Patrick is interacting with his older castmates, you know, that it's going to be more personal, you know, maybe because of their history with each other and stuff. But it just, Patrick seems so soft and sincere in a way that we haven't really associated with Picard in the past, and that's just, I think, Picard being older. The most poignant and emotional moment for me in this episode was, I think, a turning point for Picard, where he realized he'd been building up to it the entire episode, and really, I guess, for the past 10 years or so since he retired from Starfleet, but it was this outburst that he had, this epiphany that he had, where he finally just, you know, said, screw this retirement, you know, I don't belong here, basically. And it just really hit me emotionally when he said this.
Sitting here all these years, nursing my offended dignity, writing books of history people prefer to forget. I never asked anything of myself at all.
No, Evan.
I haven't been living. I've been waiting to die.
And that's the moment where everybody's like, yes, that's the Jean-Luc Picard that we want, you know, in this.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you got the sense in the episode of Family, when this is the episode after Best of Both Worlds, and Picard is dealing with the aftermath of assimilation, and he takes leave from Starfleet and he goes home to his vineyard. And that's the first time that we see the vineyard in Star Trek. And he's there, and his brother Robert helps him kind of cope with everything. And Picard was thinking about retiring from Starfleet and coming back to live on Earth, maybe at the vineyard, maybe doing something else at that time. And he had the realization that that's not what he wanted to do with his life, you know. And he talks about when he was a boy sitting underneath the stars and just dreaming about being up there and exploring.
Yeah.
And so that's who he's always been. So we knew from that episode that the vineyard is the last place that Picard really wants to be.
Yeah.
And I think he just felt like he had no other place to go eventually when everything came to a head in Starfleet. So this is going back to that episode and him having the realization again for a second time that, you know, yeah, I don't want to be here. And I miss being out there in space and making a difference. And, you know, I'm going to go back out again. I'm leaving. And making that decision to be who he really is, instead of pretending to be this person that he is not for the past decade.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting seeing him in the next, you know, the rest of the episodes, because I think he's going to be a more fragile version of the Picard that we know and love. He's going to be back out there in his adventures. He's going to be a more familiar character than he was in this episode. Not that I really had anything wrong with him in this episode. It was just, he just didn't seem himself, you know? So.
Yeah. But at least that was purposeful.
Oh, yeah, it was definitely.
As evidenced by this scene that you just played for us. You know, he was saying that he's not been himself, and he's been allowing himself to kind of wallow in it and everything. But now, okay, it's time to get things in gear and go.
Yeah, so overall, I'm really excited. Like, look, this is the only... I'm a little sad in a way, because I don't want this to end, you know?
Yeah.
Because I know that this is going to be the last we ever get of these characters. You know, after Nemesis, there was still this hope that there was time to bring them back for something else. And so it was kind of open-ended. But this is for sure. Like, this is the end for these characters. We're not going to see them after this, you know? So, yeah. So it's, I'm so glad that it's happening. But at the same time, it's kind of like sad because, you know, this will be goodbye whenever this ends. So. Not to end this on the downer note, but
you know, you got to be sentimental when it's something that you've loved for a long time and you're finally getting more of it. It's always going to make you have mixed emotions.
For sure. And I think it's just because I love it so much that I'm picking it apart like I am.
Yeah.
You want it to be good. You want it to be the best it can possibly be. And that's just where, that's where my criticism is coming from. It's not to break this down and just to be critical, to be critical. It's just because I want it to be as good as possible. And I want it to be as true to, you know, the 24th century version of Trek that I grew up with and fell in love with. And it's not going to be exactly. It's just something I'm going to have to get used to. So,
well, we definitely want to hear what our listeners have to say about this episode of Picard. Hopefully, everybody's watched it and it struck you with strong opinions like it did Sarah and I. And if it did, let us know. You can reach us on our Facebook page, just the Tribbles and Transporters page. You can reach us on Twitter, where we are at Tribbles Podcast. And then on Instagram, Tribbles and Transporters Podcast. And as always, we have our Gmail, which is tribblesandtransporters@gmail.com.
And as always, we have the links in the episode description for you to click on. I guess that will do it for us. We may be doing Picard next week, or we may be doing DS9. I'm not sure. We do have a DS9 episode of The Visitor that we recorded that is supposed to be slated next, but we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, we want to make sure that we're talking about topics that that people want to listen to.
Yeah. So thanks, guys, for listening, as always. Subscribe, rate us on iTunes, leave us some feedback there. It'll help our podcast get noticed in iTunes, because I think you have to have like a certain number of ratings first before you even show up in the search results. So, yeah, so that would help us out if you wouldn't mind doing that. And I guess we will see you guys next week.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.